On a Shabbos morning in December of 1914, in the Beis HaKnesses Sturmfergasse in Vienna, the Rav of the Shul, Rav Moshe David Fleisch, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, delivered a drasha that is very unlikely he knew at the time would change the trajectory of the world, but it did. He had been the Rav there for a while and continued to serve until the shul was destroyed in Kristallnacht. Shortly thereafter, he escaped from Austria and he went to the Netherlands. In 1943, he was transferred to a transit camp in the Netherlands called Westerbork, and unfortunately from there he was sent to Buchenwald, where he died in 1944. But this Rav Moshe David Fleisch, some of his Chidushei Torah are published in this work that you see on your page. This is the Shar Blot called Mesukim Mi Devash. Mi Devash is Rosh Yeshivas Moshe David Ben Shmuel. That was his father's name. This Rav Moshe David Fleisch, was a student of the German Orthodox rabbinic community, a Talmud from the Masorah of Rabbeinu Hirsch. And the drasha that he gave that Shabbos morning changed the world because of one person who was in attendance. The person who was in attendance was there, even though her family was from Krakow, but she happened to be in Vienna because she was there with her family for a period of time before going back to Krakow. She heard this drasha, which was delivered by Rabbi Fleisch, about the woman, the famous Isha Chachama, the Jewish heroine Yehudis, in the context of Chanukah, the Chanukah story. She was so moved and inspired, she wrote in her diary, that this propelled her to take a project that she was thinking of and move it forward. I'm sure that Rav Moshe David, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, is looking down from Shemayim at all of the little girls who go to Beis Yaakov and getting tremendous nachas to know that it was this Shabbos morning drasha, according to her own words, that Sarah Schnirer, Zichrona Livracha, credits with inspiring her and catalyzing her to go back to Krakow and make a difference. Today's discussion about the role of Talmud Torah for women is Rechava Miniyam. It is extremely vast, and we're just going to touch literally on the Rosh Prakim of this topic. It was controversial at the time that Sarah Schnirer initiated the Beis Yaakov movement, and it is still controversial today in many circles, depending on where you are and what topics you're talking about. You have here on page one a brief biography of places to go if you want to read more about this. There's much more, but just in terms of today, there was a student of Sarah Schnirer who survived the war and wrote this wonderful book called Carry Me in Your Heart, The Life and Legacy of Sarah Schnirer, founder and visionary of the Beis Yaakov movement. Her name is Pearl Benish. She also wrote another book, which is called To Vanquish the Dragon, which is about her experiences in the Holocaust, in Krakow and then in Auschwitz. And she writes about the girls, the Beis Yaakov girls who were with her, her friends, and the impact of Beis Yaakov. It's an amazing work. And then this is probably the most authoritative academic scholarly work on Sarah Schnirer. It's called Sarah Schnirer and the Beis Yaakov Movement. It's authored by a woman by Naomi Seidman, who's involved in an awesome project online that you can find called the Beis Yaakov Project. It's based in Toronto with all kinds of artifacts and documents and things. There's a great article by Leslie Ginsbar Klein. Shout out for Chicago. She has a few pieces on this. That article appears in an online journal called Lair House. And then in his book of collected essays, Shoal Stamfer, the great scholar and historian of 19th century Jewry, Eastern European Jewry, has an article, the eighth chapter, called Gender Differentiation and the Education of Jewish Women. So this is a very important article to get some backdrop. It's pre-Beis Yaakov, but it gives you some sense of what was going on. And in terms of the actual Mar Mekomos that we're going to talk about, if you want some overview and some discussion, you'll find many essays about this. Here are a couple. There is an article that was published in the 9th RJJ Journal, the Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society, many years ago by Rav Moshe Weinberger, probably like 40 years ago. It's a very lengthy article. We're going to quote some of those sources. Rav Lichtenstein has an article on this, and there is an entire book. I did not go through the whole thing, only a tiny bit. It's not an easy book to get a hold of, called Jewish Women's Torah Study, Orthodox Religious Education and Modernity by a guy by the name of Ilan Fuchs. So that's like a few hundred pages summarizing Bakoros and approaches, and there's a lot to say about this topic. The inspiration, as we mentioned, came from this drasha in late 1914, and the catalyst for this entire discussion about women's Torah education in the 20th century surrounds Sarah Schneerer, who has become almost like an iconic visionary figure and has been adopted by various people and movements and institutions to represent the values that they are espousing in terms of the next step, taking initiative in Torah education for women. Schneerer herself was, at that time, a divorced seamstress. But she had an idea, and she was determined and charismatic and persistent, and the Ribbono Shel Olam set her up in exactly the right way in exactly the right time. She was born on July 3rd, 1883 in Krakow. She was the third of nine children of Bezalel and Rosa Schneerer. They were Chassidim, tied with Tzanz, but primarily with Bells. And the Bells Rebbe is going to figure prominently in this story in a little bit. She found work after she left school as a young student. She went to public school, a Polish public school through eighth grade. She loved learning Polish and German literature and theater, but she also was interested in Jewish learning. She studied Jewish texts that her father provided for her. After she left school, she was serving as a seamstress and a dressmaker, but she voraciously read both Jewish and non-Jewish texts. She describes how in 1909, she describes in her diaries that in 1909, around that time, she started to have dreams and visions about addressing a current problem among women in Eastern Europe, which we're going to explain in a minute. She marries in 1910, but she gets divorced a couple of years later, a man by the name of Shmuel Nussbaum. And then, where at the outbreak of World War I, she finds herself in Vienna, she attends the shul of this Rav Moshe David Fleisch, who's giving lectures in shiurim in the thought in the school of Rabbina Hirsch, Torah and Derech Eretz, and a German way of thinking that she had never heard before in Poland in her Chassidische milieu. And it opens her eyes to a new way of approaching life. And that's really the backdrop of this story of the founding of the Beis Yaakov. Now, the issue of women's education, as Shoal Stamfer points out in his article, in the 19th century, is not some simple, you know, black and white, men were educated and women were ignorant. It is not that the case at all. First of all, most men, in terms of halachic education, were not highly educated. Boys were generally sent to a cheder, unless a person was wealthy, they could afford a private malamed, or this child was very unusual, and maybe a handful of boys, especially when they got older, went to a yeshiva. But as we've talked about in the past, the number of yeshivas was very small, and you're talking about a handful, hundreds and hundreds of boys not into the many thousands, hundreds of millions of Jews in Eastern Europe, small handful going to yeshivas. The boys learned in a cheder, they had a rebbe. That was the institutionalized system of chinuch. For many girls, they were literate, but literate mostly in Yiddish, not necessarily in Hebrew, not in rabbinic Hebrew, certainly not spoken Hebrew, but in Yiddish. They learned something very often called Senarena. It was a very highly published book, but that was a form of learning, which was like, I guess it's like the equivalent of the Medrash says or the little Medrash says. There were some schools for women, Shaul Stanford points out, in terms of like Chadarim, but they were not proportionally very many compared to the numbers for the boys. That's kind of like the general background. He gets into all the details in that article. But there became, over time, a problem. This problem is going to be true for men, although it's going to be different, as you'll hear in a second. And this is what the Piasetzner Rebbe is addressing in the late 1920s, the issue of young men going off the derech, getting involved in Zionism and Bundism and communism and socialism, and not Judaism. And this problem is going to persist even in Hasidic circles, even in Shtetlach. But the problem among young women is distinct and very, very problematic. It's very known by the turn of the 20th century that there is a crisis of women and Jewish observance. This crisis, you'll excuse me for saying it's in a shul, is not just a crisis of young women who are not educated Jewishly. It's a crisis of women who are not observant and who, Joel Stanford, Stanford documents, we don't like to talk about it, but there was becoming an increasingly common phenomenon of girls falling into prostitution. This is what it was. In 1903, there was a conference. You see a picture of the conference here on the second page. There was a rabbinic conference in Krakow about this issue, that girls are not being sufficiently educated and they're falling out of Yiddishkeit. They're disappearing. But the conference did not succeed in any way, shape, or form. So maybe Bubby, she should live and be well, she might say, if I were to bring this to her, she would say, of course, men, they don't know how to do anything. Leave it to the men, of course, it's not going to get done. Now, I would tell Bubby that in 1912, they formed the Agudah, which was a pretty big thing that they did. And, you know, before that, the men founded the Mizrahi. So men are not totally useless. We're not, you know, abject losers. But on this issue, the conference was a total failure. And the institution, the establishment, did not have a formal mechanism of addressing this increasingly problematic phenomenon of how to engage young women, especially like with Sarah Schneer herself, who were becoming more educated in secular contexts. So she comes back from Vienna in the summer of 1915, and she says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start a youth movement, a youth club. It was called the Orthodox Girls Union. But that wasn't really enough. She started working, trying to educate older women, meaning older girls, but that, it didn't succeed. She wasn't making an impact. They weren't so interested. She decides that she's going to start with younger girls. She's got to start a school to educate younger girls Jewishly. With what purpose? What was the goal? The goal is so that women would stay in the fold and have an inspired Yiddishkeit. That was the goal, period. There were definitely, at the same time, and it's documented in this volume, there were definitely feminist women who were active in the Jewish community in different spaces, but that was not the goal. The goal was not to advance a women's agenda. The goal was to advance a Torah agenda so that women would feel connected and engaged and lean into their Yiddishkeit and not live on the periphery. It was interesting. I once heard my father-in-law He once told me that one of his patients, you know, because he's an ophthalmologist in South Florida, so many of his patients are of a specific age bracket. Let's say that. And I don't mean the young South American age bracket, which is also a good Jewish population in South Florida. He said that there was once a woman who was a patient of his, and he was asking her about the Alter Heim, what it was like in Europe. And she said, you know, in our house, Yontif was miserable. He said, why was it miserable? This woman said, she said, because my father used to go to the Rebbe on Yontif, and I sat at home with my sisters and my mother, and we didn't know what to do. We didn't know how to make Kiddush. We didn't have, you know, enough of an education to run a house. She said, we sat around bored, which is really interesting. You know, it's one anecdote, but it just gives you a window into what can happen if somebody doesn't feel that they have the intellectual tools and the schooling, the education, to have a meaningful Yiddishkeit. They could feel trapped. So she decides she's got to have schools. She's got to have a school for girls to give them an education and a serious commitment to Talmud Torah. Otherwise, Rachman Lislan, what's going to happen? What she sees outside, so many people, they're running away from Yiddishkeit. So she has a discussion with her brother about this idea and that she wants to start the school. Their bells are chassidim. So the brother says, you know what? You should really get a bracha from the Heilige Belzer Rebbe. Let's go ask the Belzer Rebbe for a bracha. She was a poor woman at this time, and she had to scrape together a few nickels to take a train to get to Marienbad with her brother, which is where the Belzer Rebbe was.
Were they Belzer?
Yes, that's what we said at the beginning. Her family were Belzer Chassidim. So she went to take a kvittel to the Rebbe. She gives it to her brother. The brother goes to the Belzer Rebbe and says that my sister wants to start a project to educate girls so that they should stay within the framework of Yiddishkeit. So the Belzer Rebbe says two words. Bracha v'atzlacha. And that was it. She was off. She knew that the Belzer Rebbe supported what she was doing. They didn't have to get into the whole discussion of what she was exactly teaching, how she was teaching, but she was teaching, and she was teaching for the purpose that the girls should grow up to be Benos Torah, Yiras Shemayim. They should be connected to Yiddishkeit. They should be inspired like she was. They should have the same intellectual challenge that she had when she was in Vienna, when she was learning with Rav Flesch, because she went to the shiurim that he was giving afterwards. So now she comes back to Krakow. It's 1917 in the fall. She opens a tiny school in her two-bedroom apartment. Fast forward to the 26th of Adar, the 1st of March, 1935. She marries in 1930 again. She dies in 1935. At that time, there are almost 300 Beis Yaakov schools. 300 Beis Yaakov schools.
All in Poland?
In Poland, in Lithuania, in Hungary, in Germany, all around. It's spreading like wildfire. And take a look at some of these resources to see the impact and the partnerships. And soon after she got started, the Aguda, the local Aguda branch in Krakow, and then the national, the international, the full Aguda movement began to back the Beis Yaakov, and it just was off and running. But it's not without controversy. There was a significant controversy, and that controversy did not die out.
And there was
also probably a conflict with that. So, well, that's part of the question of the controversy. Let's say in this, if you turn to the next page, to source number one, there was a small town where there was a machlokas whether or not they should open a Beis Yaakov in that town, whether or not this innovation of girls' formal education, which then also had a youth movement associated with it, had publications. She published her collected writings, her autobiographical writings and her thoughts in 1933, Sarah Schneer, 2 years before she dies. There was a small community that was having a machlokas if that they should open a Beis Yaakov or not. Because there were many people who were still opposed to the Beis Yaakov because this was not a traditional approach. Traditionally, most women were not educated in a cheder. And now you're creating a whole network of chadarim and learning topics that had not been previously studied, that had been left for the boys and the men. So the Chafetz Chaim weighs in on this debate, the Heilige Chafetz Chaim. And this is maybe the second crucial personality to shape the trajectory of this movement. Now, by this time, the movement is well underway and off and running. Sarah Schneer did not wait for the Chafetz Chaim's imprimatur, but the Chafetz Chaim's shtempel, his haskama, would continue to, especially in later generations, create a halachic standard of acceptance of this model. So you see on the top left, you have here the letter. This is copied from Pearl Penish's book. Michtav mibal Chafetz Chaim al dvar batei sefer beis Yaakov. It's the letter of the Chafetz Chaim to this community, but it's more of an open letter in general about the establishment of Beis Yaakov's. You see it's written Tartzag, 1933, which is just before the Chafetz Chaim passes away. If you see on this page, just so you can get a little bit of a glimpse, the bottom left, this is the appearance of the Chafetz Chaim at the 1923 Knesia Gedola of the Agura. The Chafetz Chaim is wearing the hat, the short man. That is the one video image that we have of the Chafetz Chaim. You can find it online. It's amazing. You could see the Chafetz Chaim walking to the Knesia Gedola. And on the top right, you actually see the Chafetz Chaim's obituary from the New York Times. This is what was published in the New York Times. Chafetz Chaim 105 is dead in Poland. Venerated by Orthodox Jews as one of the 36 saints who saved the world. So the letter of the Chafetz Chaim, El Kvod O Alufim and Echvodim Chovim O Kiri Torah Charin L'Dvar Hashem, I heard that they want to, Kasher Shamati Shisnaldu Anoshim Yireim V'Charedim L'Dvar Hashem, I heard the religious people who want to start a Beit Sefer Beis Yaakov, Lilmod Bo Torah V'Yerushamayim Midos V'Derech Eretz, O Torah liyalados achinu bnei Yisrael, to teach the girls. Amarti lefolam hatov yasher Hashem chelam shkoyach. It's a good idea. Ki inyan godol v'nechratzu, it's needed. Asher zerem hakfir rachmano l'tzlam shor b'chol tokfo. What's a zerem? Zerem is a stream, but it has the connotation of a powerful current. The current of heresy is flooding Jewish communities. So what do we need to do? We need to establish Beis Yaakov's. Go down a few makams. I don't have to be Marach Barichas, Lo Kedoros HaRishon Medoreinu. It's not like the old generations, Chafetz Chaim is saying, our generation in 1933, this is right before he passed away, everybody needs. It was enough for previous generation just to read Zenarena every Shabbos. Babu Nosena Bedorosenu Eile Valkain, therefore, Bechol Oz Ruchenu V'Nafshenu. Look at the strong language. Oleinu Lishtadel Laharbos Bote Sefer Ko'ela. We should have make as many Beis Yaakovs as we can. And to save the future of the Jewish people, Hakosiv Laman HaTorah V'Adas, Yisrael Meir HaKohen Meiradin, Yisrael HaKohen Aradin, the author of Sefer Chafetz Chaim Mishneh Berurah. The Chafetz Chaim He was born in 1838 in Poland. He went to learn in Vilna. He was married in 1855. In 1873, he starts publishing. He published the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. In 1869, he had already established a yeshiva in Radin in Poland. And he was recognized universally as the Gaon Hador. Certainly after the passing of Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, the Chafetz Chaim was Kodesh Kadoshim. He was the Kohen HaGadol Me'echav. From 1894 to 1907, he worked on the Mishneh Berurah, which is the classic commentary which he edited on the Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim. He published in his life 21 Svarim. He was so humble. He would go from town to town selling Mishneh Berurahs. I saw a picture. I have at home a picture. I didn't put it on here. Of the Chafetz Chaim in 1933 after he passed away. So there is the picture of the Aron at the Levaya on a stretcher outside the yeshiva building after the hespedim. By the way, there's the picture of the yeshiva building filled with people with the hespedim. There's a men's section and a women's section in the Ratner yeshiva for the hespedim, for the Chavetz Chaim. You could see next to his body, which is covered in a talus, right there are six volumes of Mishneh Berurah. That's what he took with him after. Amazing. Of course, the Sefer Chavetz Chaim Bat Shmir Shalashon changes the whole world. The level of piety, the greatness in godless and learning, not just in Orach Chaim, but in every aspect of Torah, as that we will see in a second, Kodshim and obscure Masechtas, he was one of a kind. To have the Chavetz Chaim say, we're going to start Beis Yaakov's, so that's a game changer. What's the real core underpinning issue here in the whole Beis Yaakov? So of course there are the issues of change and modernity and roles for men and roles for women and tradition
and funding,
which the Agoda took over to make sure that they had funding and an institutional level. But we have a halachic issue, and that is really the crux of the discussion. Because if you take a look on the next page, source number 2, and this is where we can really get going, and we're going to see how the Chavetz Chaim is a crucial piece. The pasuk tells us, "V'limadatem osamas b'neichem ledarbabam." We should speak with them to our b'neichem. Now, b'neichem could be translated as children, or it could be translated as sons. So the Gemara in Kiddushin says that b'neichem here means b'neichem, your sons, v'lo b'noseichem, and not your daughters. It's translated in the narrow sense. And the Gemara then has a complex drasha in two directions to explain that based on this, fathers or mothers are not obligated to teach their daughters Torah, and daughters, women, are not obligated in Talmud Torah itself. The obligation of Torah study per se is only incumbent upon men. That's Shlav Aleph. And we know that there were, over history, many women who volunteered for Torah study. Bruria, the Gemara says, was a tremendous milumedes. Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein quotes others, lots of women historically, but technically women are not obligated. But here is the tricky Mishnah in source number 3, in the third parak in Sota. The Gemara, the Mishnah here is talking about a tragic case, unfortunately, of a marriage that is in serious distress, and the husband warns the wife not to be secluded with a particular man, and she is found to have been secluded with this man, after having been warned. Two witnesses see this. So she has to go through what we call the Parshas Sota, very unpleasant ordeal. And we're not going to get into the exact gory details of what happens to a woman who has been accused and is guilty of committing adultery after having been warned. The process is described here in the Mishnayos. It's not pleasant, not for this woman and not for anybody in the vicinity. It's quite gross. But the Mishnah says something interesting. Go down about 53% of the way down the source. Im yesh la zchus, if she has a merit, ha'isa tolala, it would keep her in abeyance, meaning she wouldn't explode on the spot in a gory mess in the Beis HaMikdash. Yesh zchus tolala shnei shanim, yesh zchus tolala shalosh shanim. Maybe if she had a merit, it would stave off the punishment for 2 years, maybe for 3 years. So the fact that she drank the May Sota in the Beis HaMikdash would not mean that she would necessarily explode on the spot. Mikan Amar Ben Asai. This is what Ben Asai says. Chayav Adam Lelamedes Bito Torah. A person must teach his daughter Torah. She'im Tishte. That if she falls into a situation where she becomes a sota, okay, that's not so likely, but just in that case, and she drinks the sota water, and she doesn't explode, she shouldn't think, you see, I fooled the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because if she's a melumedes, she'll know she might be an isha sota, but she also has a schus, so she will have known the din in Masechah Sota that the schus will make sure that she doesn't explode right now, and she won't say, ah, the Rebbe Shalom doesn't know what he's talking about. That's Ben Azai's approach. It's good malach. It's good. Rebbe Elazar Omer, the opposite, says, not a good idea. Kol ha-malamed bito Torah, anyone who teaches their daughter Torah. Now we have two different text variants. It's either ki'ilu, it is as if, or is actually, lomda tiflus. Tiflus. Teaching her tiflus. What does the word tiflus mean? Hard word to translate. So take a look on the bottom here, at source number 4. When the Gemara deals with this Mishnah, Chafal from Midbeis, Rashi says, Ki'ilu, he has the Girsa, Ki'ilu lomda tiflus. Shemitocha, from learning, she's going to learn all the legal gymnastics and all of the loopholes and all of the rules. He mevina armumis, she's going to learn stealth trickery. Va'osa dvarea bahatznean, she's going to conceal her illicit activities. So, the first approach to ki'ilu melamda tiflus is that if you teach your daughter Torah, she's going to misappropriate it for promiscuous behavior, because she's going to use it in a way of finding avenues to evade the law and engage in this type of inappropriate behavior. That's one approach. The Rambam takes a different tack on this. You see the Rambam at Tzafin, of course, Talmud Torah, end of first parak. The Rambam has an interesting way of dealing with this Mishnah. Number one, the Rambam says, Isha shalomda Torah, yesh lo schar, avol eino keschar ha'ish. Number one, the Rambam does not say it is prohibited for a woman to learn Torah. Why does the Rambam not say that? Because the Gemara never says it's prohibited for a woman to learn Torah. Quite the opposite. We have many cases of women who did learn Torah. The Rambam just says that a woman is not obligated, so she gets schar ke'enu mitzuva va'osa. Great. Why? They shalom mitzvahs. She's not commanded. Next line. Second line. Sivu chachamim. The chachamim commanded, shalo yalameid adam es bito Torah. A person should not teach their daughter Torah. Why? Oy, this got messed up. So go to the next line. Sherov hanashim, that most women, ein daiton mechuvenes lehislamed, their mind is not attuned to intensive study. Ela motzios divrei Torah ledivrei havai lefi anias daiton. But they're going to end up, instead of arriving at a truthful conclusion, because they're not methodologically trained, or they're not focused, or they don't have time, or they're not inclined for this, you know, personality-wise, whatever it is, generally speaking, the Rambam says, most women, they're not going to learn Torah effectively, and what's going to end up is coming out stam silliness. When we said in the Mishnah that Reb Lezer says you can't teach your daughter Torah, you should not teach your daughter Torah because it's teaching her tiflus, whereas Rashi said that's going to be teaching her licentiousness, for the Rambam it's going to be teaching foolishness. It's going to arrive at erroneous, false conclusions. These are the two approaches, and now you could see, of course, there could be nafka mina. What if you have a woman who's very pious? So perhaps Rashi would say that Reb Elazar would not apply this din to such a woman. Or what would the Rambam say about a woman who applies herself and is academically and cognitively capable of handling high-level learning? Perhaps that's nafka mina. The Rambam then gives us another important caveat. B'me dvar mamurim b'torah shebal peh. The prohibition for Reb Elazar to not teach your daughter Torah is Torah shebal peh, the oral Torah. Aval Torah shebichsav, but Torah shebichsav, lo yalamedo. Aval Torah shebichsav, there's nothing wrong. Eino kemalamda tiflus. Well, I should say like this. The Rambam says, "Hamalabedes bitur Torah ki ilolim da tiflus lechatchila ve imlim da ainer kamalamedes tiflus." Lechatchila, it's not a good idea, but b'diavad it's okay. This distinction between Torah shebichsav and Torah shebal peh, where did the Rambam get it from? So the Bach on the commentary in the Torah, Yoredeya, says the Rambam knows that the pasuk says that women are mitzuvah to come to the mitzvah of hakel, where the melech reads the Torah for everyone. Nashim bos lishmoa. So if they're coming, they're obligated to learn the Torah shebichsav. So Torah shebichsav they can do. So from the Rambam, we have this distinction between Torah shebal peh and Torah shebichsav. Take a look in the Shulchan Aruch. This is how it's going to be cited. Isha shalomda Torah yoredeya resh mem vavav. A woman who learns Torah yesh lo schar, she has merit. Avalok eschar ish, but not the same merit as a man, because she's not mitzvah v'yosa. You shouldn't teach your daughter Torah, because he quotes the Rambam that they are going to take it in the wrong way and come up with divrei havai. Bamed Var Mamurim, he says, with Torah Shebal Peh, but Torah Shebichsav lo yalamed lechatchila. You shouldn't teach a daughter Torah Shebichsav lechatchila, but if you teach her, then it's not lamda tiflis. Next paragraph, the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles in Krakow, whose shul is not far from Sarah Schneer's apartment. Mikol Makom, here's an important line. Sounds like this is against a Maharil, not for today's discussion. Chayeves ho'isha lilmod dinim hashayachim le'isha. A woman is obligated to study the laws that are pertinent to a woman. So according to the Ramah, there's a chiyuv alz Talmud Torah for a woman to learn all of Hilchos Shabbos, all of Hilchos Brachos, all of Hilchos Tefillah, naniach that women are chayiv in Tefillah, all of Hilchos Kashrus. That's like four lifetimes in full-time kolo. So don't worry, you have lots to do. So this is one histaygut, that women are obligated to learn that which is nogea to them. But if we take a step back and we look at the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch, if someone were to ask you, is it appropriate to establish a system of schools to teach women Torah? The initial answer would be, likely not. Even the Rambam, who allowed teaching Torah to women if it's Torah Shebichsav, he said, lechatchila, it's not advisable. But then we have to think about, well, wait a second. Number one, maybe it should depend on the woman that you're talking about. Maybe it should depend, like Rashi said, if it's a woman who's going to use the Torah in an inappropriate way. Maybe it's someone who's not. Maybe it's someone who's, you know, of pure heart and intention. And if you look, if you go back to that picture, I think that's the only picture that I'm aware of Sarah Schneerer. Part of the reason why Sarah Schneerer was able to galvanize such an important movement was because she comported herself in a way that was consistent with halacha and halachic values throughout. First of all, she looks like a very serious lady, so I probably wouldn't want to cross her bichlal. It's like, it's just very serious. But she dressed in a way that was consistent with halacha, with the Shulchan Aruch, with traditional values. So number one is the question of who we're talking about. Number two is the question of what about if these specific women were daita mechuvanas l'islamid. The Prisha has another important observation, which maybe you could imagine could be a part of this discussion. Because as we noted before, this was not a top-down rabbinic discussion. This was an enactment from the rabbis or the fathers. Avol says the Prisha, im limda la'atzma, if she taught herself, anurov shiyatzu me'arov, we see that she's no longer part of the majority of women who are not capable of learning appropriately. And then it'll be great. She'll come up with the correct conclusions. Meaning, if a woman comes and says, I want to learn, then, says the Prisha, there's no prohibition to teach her Torah. So Sarah Schneer says, I want to learn. She advertises, any girls want to learn Kimaran? Now today, I don't know if you want to go around to ask all the girls if you want to go to school or not, because you have an out, right? If you don't want to go to school, they can't force you. It's against the Prisha, because then you go back to the road. But Naniach, let's go to those times. These girls are all signing up. They're chalashing to come and learn. So the Prisha says, if they want to come and learn, then the prohibition doesn't apply of teaching women Torah. So now we come back to the Halakha Chafetz Chaim. Because after the Chafetz Chaim finished working on the Mishneh Berurah, between 1900 and 1925, he started working on another project. The Chafetz Chaim was a Halakha Kohen. He was a Kohen HaGadol Me'echav. He was fixated on remembering the Mashiach, the Tzipisa LeYeshua. And said the Chafetz Chaim, do you know what's not learned enough in the world to be prepared for Mashiach? To get ready to build a Beis HaMikdash? Kodshim! So to anybody who would listen, the Chafetz Chaim was saying, we need to learn Kodshim, especially Kohanim. He told us, he said, you must learn. It's a whole other story, which we don't have time for today, about the Nazir. I went to meet the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim told me I had to learn Kodshim because he's a Kohen. So he wrote a set of Sfarim called Likutei Halachos. What is Likutei Halachos? It's on the sections of Talmud which are not anthologized halachically by the Rif of Yitzchak Alfasi. The Rif, that's 900 years ago, made a compendium of all the Torah in the Gemara that's according to the halacha. But the Rif didn't deal with Kodshim because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam says, but wait a minute, but there's going to be a Beis HaMikdash. You have to have a compendium of halacha. And it's so true for the parts of Pesachim that are Kodshim parts of Pesachim and Sota and other parts. So he says, I'm going to put that together. So he puts Rashi on the page and he puts a little halachas on the bottom. Likutei halachas. We should know what to do when the Beis HaMikdash comes. So comes the Chafetz Chaim, and this is before the letter to Sarah Schneer. The Chafetz Chaim writes in the Likutei halachos, see on the bottom in source number 8, Venire, it seems to me, to kol zeh, this is all, this whole discussion, the Gemara, about teaching Torah to women, to daughters, Dafka v'zmanim shelafanenu. It's dafka in previous generations. Shekol echad hayadar b'makom avosav. Everybody lived with their parents. V'kabolas ha'avos hayachazak ma'od. Eitzel kol echad v'echad lesnai kederach shadarko avosav. Kashka ucha amar hakasav shalavicha v'yageitcha. B'zeo yucha yinu yucholim lomar shalot tilmud Torah. In previous generations, we should say, women shouldn't learn. Just learn mimetically from your mothers. That's, you'll know what to do. And she'll follow Hayasharim, Abosel Hayasharim. Aval Ka'es, Bavonosein or Rabin. But today, Shekabola Sa'avos Nisrofif Ma'od. Parents, many parents are losing their grip. Vigam Motsu Sheinu Darbamok Mavosav. Girls are moving out. They're not necessarily living with their parents anymore. Especially because now in the 1920s, women are being secularly educated. They're learning to write and read in Polish, and they're learning general literature. Bevadai mitzvah rabo lalamdom chumish. It's a mitzvah to teach them chumish vegam neviim. Uksuvim, and Umusare Chazal, the Musar of Chazal. That's interesting, because Chumash, that's Torah Shebichsav. Musar from Chazal, that's Torah Shebal Peh. That's Torah Shebal Peh. Musar from Chazal. Kagon Maseches Avos, like Pirkei Avos. V'sefer Menoras Hamor, Chadome, Kedeshis Ames Etzlam, Inyan Emuna Seinu, that should strengthen their Emuna. Without that, God forbid, they may leave the way of Yiddishkeit. If you don't educate the women. And they will abandon completely all the foundations of our faith. This is the same Chafetz Chaim who a few years later is going to write in support of the Beis Yaakov movement. And this is what becomes the source of the next controversy. Because what's the reaction to this Chafetz Chaim? Take a look on the next page. The Halakha Divrei Yatziv, the Gaon Tzadik, the Halakha Kloisenberger Rebbe writes in the Tshuvas. He says, I know the Chafetz Chaim wrote what he wrote. Look on the bottom. Ach! Even though he was the Kohen HaGadol Me'echav Baal Chafetz Chaim, he was great, he was giant, but Torah he who ve'emes ksiv ba ve'emes nitan l'chol lomar daito ba'emes. I have to speak the truth, and I don't agree. I can't accept it. V'das Rabbi Hussein of Rabbi Hussein of HaKadoshim Shelo Ratzu Lozuz Stiyakala Mimashem Muskam La'alacha B'Shulchan Aruch V'Hanal Le'Isser. He says, our tradition in Kloisenberg is not to accept the Chavetz Chaim. We don't accept it. Weiter is a lot more in this tshuva. Number 10, turn the page. The Heilige Sadra Rebbe, the Heilige Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, Zechet Tzadik Levrach, he quotes, he says, the context of here is a piece in the end of Vayol Moshe about learning and studying the Hebrew language. So he talks all about the study of Hebrew language, and then in the context he's talking about what about teaching girls. So he has a lengthy piece here in that context all about teaching girls in general. He says, oh, you're going to quote to me the Chavetz Chaim as if, says on the top, Chas v'Shalom, as if he said about a halacha psuka she'enu b'noik b'sman zeinu Chas v'Shalom. No! They don't know what they're talking about. He just said to teach them Chumash Musari Chazal, there was never an Isra in that in the first place. It's just that people weren't careful about it. And that's all. And then, take a look at the next paragraph. Kosav Lalamdom Chumash Avalo Kosav Empirish Rashi Zal Shezev Vadai Osir Chavetz Chaim. He never said they should learn Rashi. Should only learn Chumash. Because Rashi is definitely Gufei Torah and Omek Torah Shebal Peh. So you have the different Yatziv who says, I can't really accept this Chavetz Chaim. You have the Sadr Rebbe who says, yeah, the Chavetz Chaim never meant they could learn Rashi. They could only learn Chumash. But there are others. If you look in the Chuvas in the Oz Nidbaru, he says, yeah, when the Chavetz Chaim said they could learn Chumash, he meant they could learn Chumash and all the Mefarshim. Period. And if you look at the Tzitz Eliezer in 11, the way that the Tzitz Eliezer characterizes it, Va'akoin ha'godol me'echav ha'gon ha'tzadik bal Chavetz Chaim, top left, b'sifra l'kuti halachos, shoda narga kimat b'kol ikara shel nehigas halacha zus le'esor l'motor l'nashim b'zman hazeh. He says in Achanami, essentially, the Chavetz Chaim said that this halacha doesn't apply in our day the way that it did in previous generations. Unlike the Divrei Yatziv, who said, we don't accept it. Unlike the Satmar Rav, who's saying, the Chavetz Chaim is really saying the same thing everybody said until now. The Tzitz Eliezer, the Heiliger, Reb Lezer Yehuda Waldenberg is saying, no, the Chavetz Chaim is saying things are different today. And that we'd apply it differently. I did put in the sources, there are several tshuvas of Rav Moshe who deals with this, where he was asked about girls learning Mishnayos, and he's not in favor of it. It's Torah Shebal Peh. He's a tshuva about a woman giving a shiur in a shul. So he has several tshuvas on this topic. But perhaps the other end of this spectrum is the late Gaon, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha. Rav Soloveitchik is pictured here on your source packet in the number 12, delivering a women's Gemara shiur in Stern College. And if you look on the next page, in the collected letters, he encouraged Talmud Torah for women in his school, the school that he founded in Boston. And then, in this school on Long Island that he was being asked about, so first in the letter, the left-hand letter to Rabbi Rosenfeld, he says, the Rav writes to him, he says, I'm not going to answer your question about whether we should teach advanced Talmud, whether we should teach Gemara to women, unless you tell me in advance that you're going to accept what I say. If you're asking my opinion just for theory, I'm not going to discuss it with you. I'm planning on writing about this when I have a chance. Okay. So he says, in the next letter on the right-hand side, please accept my apologies for not answering your letter sooner. I had an overcrowded schedule, etc. I expressed my opinion to you long ago that would be a very regrettable oversight on your part if we were to arrange separate Hebrew courses for girls. Not only is the teaching of Torah Shebal Peh to girls permissible, but it is nowadays an absolute imperative. It's imperative. Why is it imperative? Well, if you think about it, the Rav is writing now in the 1950s in the United States, where women are out in the world. They are certainly educated. Some of them have advanced education degrees. They're reading, they're writing. So the Rav is saying today, it's not just a heter to teach advanced Torah to women. To tell us that we're going to have one type of curriculum for the boys and a watered-down curriculum for the girls, he says, that's totally a huge mistake. So now you could see how even within the framework of Beis Yaakov and the issue of teaching Torah to women, we have so many perspectives. For the Satmar Rav, and I don't know what it's like in Satmar Beis Yaakov's, but I'm assuming that in Satmar Beis Yaakov's, they're much more circumscribed. I don't know if they learn Rashi in Satmar Beis Yaakov's. That's maybe on one end. And then you have a traditional Beis Yaakov, where I think in the Beis Yaakov schools, the girls learn Rashi, they learn Midrashim, they learn Torah Shebaal Peh. And then you have other schools that follow more in the tradition of Rav Soloveitchik, who was one of the greatest Gaonim of the 20th century, where they encourage women to learn Gemara. And Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, followed this approach, and there's a lot to say about that. But what the Rav did is, in a certain sense, some would say, just continue the tradition of the Chavetz Chaim. Others would totally argue. The Rav, his grandson, his Chavrusa, and his Talmud, the wonderful and saintly, tremendous tzaddik and major Talmud Chacham Rosh Hashiva and Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elkanan, Rav Meir Twersky, he describes the Rav's approach to this issue. Take a look on the next page. This is in an essay that he wrote called A Glimpse of the Rav in 1996 in Tradition, a hesped for Rav Soloveitchik, and with this we're going to conclude. The third verse, which reconciles the apparent contradiction, is this. Truth. And men of truth transcend facile classification and defy superficial stereotyping. This is an important yesod for all of us, which it means a lot to me personally, and I think it's worth us thinking just about this in general. The Rav was neither left nor right wing, modern nor ultra-orthodox. He was a man of Torah, truth. Truth, its underlying unity, uncompromised, often undergoes a process of diffraction and manifests itself in a variety of guises. The Rav's position, like those of the Chavetz Chaim and other Chachmei HaMasorah, regarding women's education, reflected his intuitive understanding of what the internal dynamic of Masorah prescribes for the contemporary predicament. Meaning, the Rav was not influenced by feminism, by outside, external pressures or motivations to change the curriculum. What he saw was an internal motivation to maximize commitment to Yiddishkeit, to continuity, to Masorah. The same way that you could argue that the Prizbul, the financial instrument that was instituted by Hillel, was not a leniency, rather it was a tool through which the Beis Din could maximize the mitzvah of Im Kesef Tal Ve'Ezami, because there was an internal need. There was a halachic value. Pre-World War II, European Jewry had been in the throes of a religious crisis, a fact omitted in our romanticized histories of the period. The forces of assimilation were very strong and many succumbed. The crisis was most acute in the area of Torah education for women. Profound corrective educational measures would have been necessary in Europe, the bastion of orthodoxy, a fortiori in the United States. The halacha prohibiting Torah study for women is not indiscriminate or all-encompassing. Parenthetically, we only mentioned the Prisha. There are many more achronim who deal with different aspects of this. There is complete unanimity that women are obligated to study halachos pertaining to mitzvos which are incumbent upon them. Clearly, men are allowed to provide instruction in these areas. A father's obligation of chinuch relates equally to sons and daughters. The prohibition of teaching Torah Shebaal Peh to women relates to optional study. If ever circumstances dictate that the study of Torah Shebaal Peh is necessary to provide a firm foundation for faith, such study becomes obligatory and obviously lies beyond the pale of any prohibition. Undoubtedly, the Rav's prescription was more far-reaching than that of the Chafetz Chaim and others, but the difference in magnitude should not obscure their fundamental agreement. Intuitively, it is clear that the guidelines of the Talmud and Masechah Sota were never intended for our epoch. That is not an instance of modernism, but Torah intuition. We began with someone who was speaking in a new language, in a new form. Rabbi Flesch, who was addressing the congregation through the lens and the tradition of Rav Hirsch, which was a new expression of traditional Torah in a new age, facing new crises, which we've alluded to in other discussions. And this precipitated, it catalyzed, it launched Sara Schneerer's personal crusade to address the attrition of women from tradition, from traditional Yiddishkeit. And this precipitated a controversy. And that controversy raged. And who waded into the controversy? The Chafetz Chaim, the Heilige Chafetz Chaim. But he too, and his position is going to be the subject of controversy. What would the Chafetz Chaim say today about Torah study for women at a high level in terms of Talmud or other intensive studies? Who knows? I don't know. But now we have a further controversy from the Divrei Yatziv and the Satmar Rav on one side, to the Gaon Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik on the other side, and Rav Moshe and others. But this controversy is alive because everybody, Eilu ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chaim, everybody in this sphere of halachic discourse has the same goal. And that is to perpetuate a fealty to the Masorah, to maintain our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to the Masorah of our Avos, to maintain our Yiddishkeit, our commitment to halacha. And that is what remains at the heart of the legacy of Sara Schneerer and all of the Baalei HaMasorah who discuss and engage in this halachic controversy.